time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the line of fire.
We're going back to school today, focusing on children's schools, focusing on college campuses, sharing some information with you that you may find shocking, eye-opening, but hopefully along the way, encouraging as well. Michael Brown, thanks so much for joining us today on The Line of Fire. 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. Email me directly at Dr. Brown. That is drbrown at askdrbrown.org. Now, I'll take questions along the way today if you want clarification on something, but I would rather... if you can call me with a personal story, let me explain what I mean. A lot of the stuff I'm going to talk about may not seem that relevant to you at first glance until you find out how many people are enmeshed in difficult school-related situations right now. You say, okay, what in the world are you talking about? Let me make myself clear. This past Tuesday night, we drove about an hour and a half over to a rural part of North Carolina where pastors and leaders and interested believers came together, almost 100 people, which was a good turnout for this particular event on a Tuesday night. And we were going to talk about the issue of homosexuality. You say, well, yeah, that is a good turnout. Why would the people be there? Well, we had a woman who's involved in ministry to those struggling with same-sex issues. She shared her testimony of coming out of lesbianism. Wonderful, articulate testimony, glorifying to Jesus. And I got up and spoke about what's happening in terms of gay activism in the schools, in the media, in the religious world, and on and on, and talked about the twofold calling that we have to reach out to homosexual men and women with compassion and to resist gay activism with courage. Now, again, our focus is on the schools. I did find it interesting that immediately after the teaching was done, that different individuals wanted to talk to me privately, leaders, to tell me about what was happening in their own church. Now, remember, this is a rural part of North Carolina. We're not talking about big city New York. We're not talking about San Francisco. We're talking about rural North Carolina. Different leaders came up to me to tell me confidentially what was happening in their church. X number of families. One pastor, I'm sure, doesn't have a large church in terms of thousands of people or anything like that. I don't even know if he has 100. He wanted me to know about three families in his congregation where the kids are wrestling with same-sex issues. Another pastor came up to me. Again, I don't think his church has even into the hundreds multiplied. He wanted me to know about a couple of youngsters in the youth group at church that were struggling with same-sex issues. Then, during question and answer time, a woman there who's a school counselor in high school told us about how gay activists tried to get their materials into the school, but there were others that resisted them coming in. Now I think there's a change in superintendents there, and the door may be wide open. She wanted to know what rights she had because of the pressures that she sees, but she wanted to confirm that she sees a massive increase of lesbianism, or at least bisexuality, in high school. Now I've heard it down to middle school as well. In fact, several times as I've talked about some of these things in different parts of America, not because I like to talk about this, but feel a sense of calling and urgency to do so. And sometimes I'm invited in specifically to talk about these things so that we can gain God's heart for those who are broken and lost and hurting, just like the rest of humanity with other issues, and that we can be alert to stand against the activism. So I always tell people, like it or not, this is coming to a school near you, to a church near you, to a place of business near you, to a court near you, to a family near you. These are issues that are not just out there. In fact, many of you listening, you're either struggling yourself with same-sex attraction, maybe you're married, but struggling secretly, and you feel like you can't tell anyone, or you have an issue with a family member. You're not alone. God's grace is more than sufficient. The church needs to step up in its compassionate outreach to those with same-sex attraction, as well as to be alert as to what's happening in society. And by the way, if you just want to call with a counseling-related question because you don't know what to do in this situation, I'm happy to take some calls along those lines as well, 866-34-TRUTH. So I've spoken about these things and talked about some of the stuff happening in the schools, which is quite shocking, only to have educators come up to me afterwards and say, oh, you have no idea what's going on in the schools. Now, you have to remember, I've talked about it at some length, and they'll come up to me and say, oh, you have no idea what's happening in the schools. So what do you mean? Tell me. And what I'll commonly hear is it's super common now for girls to do sexual things with other girls, for there even to be intimidation to do it. It's not just because, oh, boys are going to look at that. Oh, no, no, no. There is a rise in bisexuality, and let's try this out, lesbianism, especially in the younger kids. I'm not just talking about college now. I'm talking about high school, even middle school, with girls in particular. So she confirmed that. That was kind of eye-opening for people. But here's what I really want you to hear. Are you ready? Another man came up to me. He didn't want to say this publicly because he didn't want people to know the specific school or situation he was talking about. Are you ready? Rural North Carolina, okay? Believe it or not, what I'm telling you is true, believe it or not, is more relevant than you understand. And maybe you do understand quite well already. This leader said to me, it's a pastor, that a good friend of his daughter's in high school, local high school there, rural North Carolina, the friend of his daughter is a passionate softball player, loves to play softball. But she just quit the high school girls' softball team. Why? Because every other girl on the team was a lesbian. High school. I am not making this up. I shared that yesterday with another pastor as we were comparing notes on things, and he said, oh yeah, there's a woman in our church who was on a softball team who left her husband because of other lesbians, had a lesbian relationship with a woman on the softball team. It's a grown woman. And I remember two young ladies, college age, a little bit older, coming to me for counsel last year because they said they play softball in a local league and they were the only non-lesbians on the team and were trying to figure out, should they stay? How should they approach this? How could they be witnesses? I am not making this up. Now, I have some encouragement for you, but first, just the stark reality of things. And I'm going to talk to you in a moment, probably the second segment, about the origin of some of our college campuses. When I started to dig into this a few years ago, I knew a little of it. The more I dug, the more shocked that I was, the more my eyes were open. I'm talking about mind-boggling when you look at some of the origins of our great universities, be it Harvard, be it Yale, be it Princeton, and on and on. It's kind of mind-boggling considering where they are today. But if you will go to Harvard Business School, the online application, I took a snapshot of it on the computer about 5 years ago. And when you clicked on gender, you have to say if you're a man or woman, right? No. No. Male, female, transgender. Three choices, because you may not be male or female. Harvard Business School online application. Well, I checked it again a few days ago. And apparently three genders was not enough. Apparently male, female, transgender was not enough. It now says male, female, undisclosed, specify below. So it may be another variant. When you hear the origins of Harvard University and realize where it is today, you'll find it even more mind-boggling. So I got an email forwarded to me by a colleague a few months back. It was from a concerned mother. Her daughter had gone to a university in North Carolina, raised in a Christian home, now bombarded with gay activism on the campus, bombarded with all kinds of false teaching about what the scriptures really say, and now beginning to question her own sexuality, which she never had before, and questioning biblical teaching, and the mother saying, what in the world can I do? And there is so much activism on the campus in terms of what the kids are being taught in college classes. If you've got a story like that to share, I'd love to hear from you. You don't have to say where you are if there's anything embarrassing to you, but 866-34-TRUTH. We come back, the origins of some of our universities. Prepare to be shocked. Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us. Remember, one of our purposes on the broadcast is to be a voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society in chaos and a church in compromise, which means that we often need to sound the alarm. You'll either thank me now or thank me later, but truth is important. The fact is, God remains God in the midst of chaos in this world. God remains God even when his people fail. Jesus is Lord. He is building his church. He is building his messianic congregation. The gates of hell will not prevail against it. Although we see so much reason for discouragement in America and other parts of the world, the fact is in the last decades, more people have been saved than any other time in church history. More people are being saved every day in recent years than any other time in church history. Around the world, God is moving. But we must not put our heads in the sand. We must not ignore reality of what's happening around us. After all, aren't we called to be salt and light? Aren't we called to make a difference? There's a famous quote from Samuel Adams that he wrote to James Warren, November 4th, 1775. Maybe you've heard it. Since private and public vices are in reality, though not always apparently, so nearly connected, of how much importance, how necessary is it that the utmost pains be taken by the public to have the principles of virtue early inculcated on the minds even of children and the moral sense kept alive, and that the wise institutions of our ancestors for these great purposes be encouraged by the government. For no people will tamely surrender their liberties, nor can any be easily subdued when knowledge is diffused and virtue is preserved. On the contrary, when people are universally ignorant and debauched in their manners, they will sink under their own weight without the aid of foreign invaders. Quite a quote. Quite a quote, and quite relevant. 866-34-TRUTH. Let me first give you a testimony of encouragement, and then I want to talk to you about some of our nation's campuses and where they were in their origin. I mean, it's mind-boggling to see where they have gotten. And maybe later in the show I'll read my children's school poem that I haven't read in a while on the broadcast called Here at School, The Slant is Gay. Okay, I mentioned the meeting that we did in rural North Carolina about an hour and a half outside of Charlotte on Tuesday night. I was accompanied by three gentlemen, part of FIRE, part of our ministry here. So I didn't notice this, but there was a woman, a young woman, in the back, African-American woman, who got up partway when I was speaking, after a lesbian woman shared her testimony, got up and left. I didn't notice that. We were driving home. We hadn't had dinner. And, yeah, trying to eat healthy, but the only real option at that moment was McDonald's. So said, all right, well, I said, why don't we just stop at McDonald's? And should we go in? Yeah, we'll just go in. As we get out of the car to walk in, one of our guys says, hey, wasn't that the lady that was at the meeting that walked out? I said, yeah, she reeks from cigarettes. And anyway, I didn't notice either way. We go in, we order our meals, and another of the young men with us disappears. So I just figured he went to the bathroom for a minute. When he was still not back with us. We were sitting down to eat. It's a couple minutes later now. We thought, well, maybe he's outside sharing the gospel with someone. Sure enough, that's what happened. He felt led to go talk to this young woman. Now, check this out. You want to talk about the mercy and goodness and grace of God. Here's what happens. She told the young man that was sharing the gospel with her that she was raped by her father, and she hates men. She's 19 years old, living as a lesbian. Still with some Christian beliefs, though, okay? She felt compelled to go to the church Tuesday night, even though in her mind she knew there was no church service taking place on Tuesday night. She felt compelled to go to the building and comes in, and what is it? It's a meeting dealing with homosexual issues, and who's testifying but a lesbian, former lesbian, a woman that's come out of lesbianism, happily married, following Jesus. And this young lady listens and is in a state of shock because she said, that's me. So first she knows there's normally not a Tuesday night service, but she feels compelled to go to the building, goes to the building, there's a meeting on homosexuality, and who's sharing but a woman who's come out of lesbianism herself. So ends up she leaves after that. But she sees we have a book table. Of course, the materials were for sale. If someone couldn't afford it, we'd gladly give it away. One of the books by Jeff Conrad, You Don't Have to Be Gay. She grabs the books and takes a couple, thinking maybe they're free, but either way, she wanted the books, which is wonderful. I mean, thank God, that's what the books are there for. And now she's sitting at McDonald's, and who pulls up at McDonald's but the speaker and the folks that were with him. And the first thought is, oh, no, I took one of the books or two of the books. But one of our guys just feels led to go out and share the gospel with us. So you know that God is after this young woman. God is after her. And when she told our friend her name, she even had a neat biblical name on top of it. So I believe God in his love set this up. Okay, check this out. Harvard University, all right? When it was founded, Harvard College, 1642. Now, to get into the school, you had to be pretty fluent in Latin and Greek to get in. Now, this is Harvard, okay? Harvard College, 1642. Everyone shall consider the main end of his life and studies. Now, what do you think it says? Everyone should consider the main end of his life and studies. Maybe to be a productive person, maybe to be a productive part of society, maybe to give practical implementation of their knowledge for the betterment of mankind. No, that's not what it said. At Harvard, everyone shall consider the main end of his life and studies to know God and Jesus Christ, which is eternal life. Harvard. Seeing the Lord giveth wisdom, everyone shall seriously by prayer and secret seek him. Harvard. A few years ago in what's called Gaperl, at many of the campuses, that's April, the whole month given to gay pride celebration and flying the gay flag on campuses in America. This happens commonly. At Harvard University, there was and this is not the only time this happened, but the one particular year I was documenting this, they had special events. A small crowd came for the opening of the Gaperl events, but part of the events, they had a panel of sadomasochistic experts. Yes, a panel of sadomasochistic experts at Harvard, the beginning of Gaperl. Harvard, 1642. Everyone shall so exercise himself in reading the scriptures twice a day that they be ready to give an account of their proficiency therein. In the public church assembly, they shall carefully shun all gestures that show any contempt for neglect of God's ordinances. They shall eschew all profanity of God's holy name, attributes, word, ordinances, and times of worship, and study with reverence and love carefully to retain God and his truth in their minds. The origins of Harvard University. Wow. Whole lot more to come. Stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us on the Line of Fire today. Michael Brown, talking about our children's schools and our college campuses. And I've got some articles in front of me here. James Edwin Orr, who's the great evangelical revival scholar, why campus revivals spark missionary advance. Our college campuses have historically been places where God is moving powerfully and has moved. And in fact, there's a strong prayer movement being exported to different campuses in America. There's been a real focus in Harvard and the Ivy League in recent years, a lot of prayer, fasting, crying out, and a fresh stirring. So you never know what's going to happen. The origins are decidedly Christian, many of our greatest universities. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Okay, I want to contrast something for you, all right? And remember, tomorrow, if you've got questions, we've got answers. So anything you want to chat about, raise issues, questions about, get further clarification for, challenge me on anything I've said, tomorrow's the day to do it. If you can't call in, you can always shoot us an email. And if you're just at the website, askdrbrown.org, click on contact, and the information will get to us, and we will sort it out to the right people or to me. Here's a poem I wrote about what's happening in our kids' schools. GLSEN, by the way, stands for Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network. The executive executive director for years of GLSEN was Kevin Jennings, who has since been appointed by our president to be the Safe Schools Czar. That's correct. But let me read this poem to you. Then I'm going to talk again about our college campuses and the origin of them. So this is stuff that happens now in elementary school, up sometimes even in preschool. Little Johnny went to school there to learn a brand new rule. No longer could the boys be boys or have their special trucks and toys. Only six, so young and tender. It's time for him to unlearn gender and break the binding two-sex mold, that hurtful thinking that's so old. Parents at home can have their say, but here at school, the slant is gay. In other words, to make this clear, there's nothing wrong with being queer. Having two moms is mighty fine. To disagree is out of line. We'll deconstruct the family and smash religious bigotry and keep the church out of the state by saying faith is really hate. Free speech can only go one way, since here at school, the slant is gay. So little ones, it's time to learn about famous queers, each one in turn. Lesbian greats long neglected, well-known gays just now detected. Some perhaps were man-boy lovers, will keep that stuff under the covers. GLSEN will fill in for granny and help kids find their inner tranny. Those born in the body that's wrong will hear of a sex change before long. And through the years as Johnny grows, he will learn that anything goes with Bill, who's trans, and Joe, who's bi, and Sue, who thinks that she's a guy. United in the day of silence, joining the gay-straight alliance, a queer new system rules the day, since here at school, the slant is gay. You may wonder, what did I mean, GLSEN, Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, will fill in for granny and help kids find their inner tranny? Well, a few years back, probably about 5 years ago, I purchased something called the GLSEN Lunchbox, second edition. This is educational tools to be used by elementary school teachers, and it has various exercises, and they want kids to learn their vocabulary, including things like gender, queer, and stuff like that, and all these things, and then elementary school kids, and then learn American and world history and find out how many of the famous leaders were actually gay. And that's take me too far afield to interact with that right now. But one of the exercises is helping kids find their inner tranny, meaning their inner transgender identity. I kid you not. Help kids find their inner transgender identity. Maybe they're not really at home being a boy or a girl. Exercise for elementary school children. Perhaps being taught at a school where your elementary school kid goes. Would you rather I don't talk about it, just talk about happy things, or would you rather I tell you the truth? Remember, me being on radio is not a matter of being a popularity, it's not a matter of a popularity contest for me, it's a matter of honoring God and seeking to serve you. That's why we do it. So let's contrast what's happening even in some of our elementary schools with the origin of many of our finest universities. Princeton University, founded in 1746 as the College of New Jersey. The school's motto was, "Under God's power, she flourishes." Until 1902, every president of Princeton was a minister. Although seminary training was the school's first goal, its founding purpose went beyond that. Quote, though our great intention was to erect a seminary for educating ministers of the gospel, yet we hope it will be useful in other learning professions, ornaments of the state, as well as the church. Columbia University, founded as King's College in 1754 by a royal charter of King George II, had as its goals to enlarge the mind, improve the understanding, polish the whole man, and qualify them to support the brightest characters in all the elevated stations in life. The first advertisement of the college disclaims any intention of imposing on the scholars the peculiar tenets of any particular sect of Christians, but to inculcate upon their tender minds the great principles of Christianity and morality, in which true Christians of each denomination are generally agreed. I've got all this information in the book I'm just editing now, finishing at last, A Queer Thing Happened to America, and what a long, strange trip it's been. You have no idea the opposition to publishing a book like this. One publishing insider told me that for his company to do it, it would bring a tremendous backlash against the company in terms of other authors not working with them or stores not working with them. This is the reality, friends. The model of Boston University, and it's not talking about the origins of the colleges, but where they've gone. That's where the controversy would be. The motto of Boston University was learning, virtue, and piety. It was founded as a Methodist seminary in Vermont in 1839 before its eventual transfer to Boston in 1867. And until 1967, all of its presidents were Methodist ministers. Okay, I got time for one more. Motto of the University of Pennsylvania, founded in 1740 but only opened in 1751, was laws without morals are useless. Motto of Brown University, founded in 1764 as Rhode Island College, was In God We Hope. Rutgers University, founded in 1766 as Queens College, had as its motto, Son of Righteousness, Shine Upon the West Also. Its founding purpose was for the education of the youth of the said province and the neighboring colonies in true religion and useful learning, and particularly for providing an able and learned Protestant ministry. And one of the schools that was at the forefront in all this was Yale. Here's a report. Sam Heller, writing in the Yale Daily News, October 27th, 2006. Yale is really, really gay. Like, totally gay. To the point that from 2001 to 2006, they had what was called the Larry Kramer Initiative for Gay and Lesbian Studies that really boosted the program forward. One of the women teaching classes in that teaches sacred liturgy and has just written an article called Queer Worship. I kid you not. The key is an awakening, a spiritual awakening that will lead to a moral awakening, that will lead to a cultural awakening. The good news is it can start with you and me. The bad news is if we don't realize we're asleep, it's hard to wake up. Stay with us. Question from a caller. Couldn't stay on the air, so let me address this now. I was talking in the last segment about the Christian origin of many of our greatest schools in America. In fact, well into the mid-1800s, the great, great majority, probably 80-90% of our colleges and universities in America were founded by Christians and for Christian purposes. So some of the school mottos, these for the glory of God or learning, virtue, piety type of mottos, the question was, where are these mottos today? The answer, they are often on the school's coat of arms. They're originally written in Latin, many of them, and can still be found there. In fact, as I'm doing the final editing now on my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, And 866-34-TRUTH, sorry, didn't give the number out, 866-34-8-7884. as I've been doing the final research, I cite lots and lots of books, but so much information is available online. So whenever possible, you link to online data, and some of it's only available online. But the custom is you have to say when you found it. In other words, if I'm looking for a certain point, a quote that was 3 years old, and that's when I found the thing online, then I go to that same link, and I say, okay, accessed May 12th, 2010. That confirms that it's still there. Otherwise, you say, okay, since removed or now available in another site. Well, I went through each and every one of these mottos in detail, and most all of them are still found in the history section of these university websites. Some of them are still found on the mottos. Now check this out. I remember doing an outreach at Yale University, which is it's elite, one of the elite schools among the elite schools. I mean, in the 2004 elections, both presidential candidates, George Bush and John Kerry, and one of the two vice presidential candidates, John Edwards, were all Yale grads. I mean, that's pretty impressive. But I remember doing an outreach lecture there, a Jewish outreach lecture, probably 20 years ago. And I was just shocked at the amount of decadence on the campus. And even then, the level of rising gay activism that you could see on the campus in the midst of all of the tremendous intellectual education that people may get. Yale founded in 1701. Its purpose was to plant and under ye divine blessing to propagate in this wilderness the blessed reformed Protestant religion in ye purity of its order and worship. And Timothy Dwight was one of the presidents of Yale, one of the more illustrious presidents, and a man under whom several seasons of revival broke out at Yale. And that's where I want to especially encourage you, by telling you how dark things were for a season and how God turned things. But to this day, the chapel at Yale, to this day, it's Timothy Dwight Chapel, so it's named after former Yale president Timothy Dwight. And this inscription stands to this day at the chapel. Christ is the only, the true, the living way of access to God. Give up yourselves, therefore, to him with a cordial confidence, and the great work of life is done. It was not until 1928, I was informed, that compulsory chapel attendance ceased at Yale. Until the beginning of the 1900s, every president of Yale had been a minister. But there are different seasons. There are different seasons over the history of Yale in the 1700s and 1800s where there was some backsliding, where there were seasons of apostasy, where there were seasons of rationalism, and God turned things and revival came. Here's one account. Benjamin Silliman, American chemist, science educator, editor, who served on the Yale faculty during the president of Timothy Dwight, 1795 to 1817. This was during a season of revival there. Quote, Yale College is a little temple. Prayer and praise seem to be the delight of the greater part of the students. Let me get into this, and I'll finish on the other side of the break. James Edwin Orr talked about what happened in America after the Revolutionary War. There was a time of backsliding, especially on the college campuses. And when Lyman Beecher entered Yale in 1796, he claimed to be the only professing Christian out of a student body of 200. And Orr says in 1790, America had won its independence, but it had lost something as well in the wake of the Revolutionary War, French infidelity, so French unbelief, deism, and the generally unsettled condition of society had driven the moral and spiritual climate of the colonies to an all-time low. Drunkenness was epidemic, profanity was of the most shocking kind, bank robberies were a daily occurrence, and for the first time in the history of the American settlement, women were afraid to go out at night for fear of being assaulted. What happened? Second Great Awakening. Turn the tide, and the turn the tide on the campuses, too. I'll fill you in on that when we come back. All right. What happened on our college campuses in the past when decadence set in, when immorality set in, when godlessness set in. 1790s, thereabouts. Listen to James Edwin Orr describing what happened on the campuses for the negative. These were Christian campuses. These were godly campuses founded by godly leaders for godly goals, but backsliding had set in. A poll taken at Harvard, Orr tells us, revealed not one believer in the whole student body. At Princeton, where a similar survey showed there to be only two Christians on campus, when the dean opened the chapel Bible to read, a pack of playing cards fell out, someone having cut a rectangle from each page to fit the deck. Conditions on campus had degenerated to the point that all but five at Princeton were part of the filthy speech movement of that day, while students there developed the art of obscene conversation. At Williams College, they held a mock communion, and at Dartmouth, students put on an anti-church play. In New Jersey, the radical leader of the deist students led a mob to the Raritan Valley Presbyterian Church, where they burned the Bible in a public bonfire. It was late 1700s in America. Christians were so few on the average campus and were so intimidated by the non-Christians that they met in secret. They even kept their minutes in code so no one could find about their clandestine fellowship. So Timothy Dwight at Yale, will focus on Yale, helped bring Yale back. He fired some of the professors who had embraced the deistic rationalism of the French Revolution. He debated students about the inspiration and reliability of the scriptures. He preached on this theme for 6 months in chapel. And he brought a message in 1796 called The Nature and Danger of Infidel Philosophy, and it had an immediate effect. One student wrote, from that moment, infidelity was not only without a stronghold, but without a lurking place to espouse or cause, was now as unpopular as it had been before to profess a belief in Christianity. That same year, 26 students, with what, roughly 200 total in the student body, founded the Moral Society of Yale College. It discouraged profanity, immorality, and intemperance by 1800. It included between one-third and one-half of all the students in its membership. God moved. Now, I know the foundations were different in terms of the having a godly Christian president with a certain moral base, and it may be very different today, but it's the same God who can turn hearts. And it's critical, though, that we understand the urgency of the hour. It's critical that we understand what is happening in our society. If you missed the beginning of the broadcast, please, by all means, get online. Go to AskDrBrown.org, subscribe to the podcast if you haven't done that already, or within several hours of the broadcast, or once we're into the evening hours, we almost always have the show posted for the day. Just listen online. I talk about things that are happening in rural North Carolina in high schools that you need to know about, because it could be your kids, neighbor kids, folks in your church. We need to understand what's happening. Then we need to go to God in contrition, and then we need to ask God to start an awakening in our own hearts, in our own lives. What's the use of us pointing a finger outwardly if we ourselves are not living rightly? Let's humble ourselves. Let's go after God and get involved. Find out what's happening in your schools, especially if your kids are in public school. Find out what's happening on the college campuses if your kid's involved. If you're involved, please get word out to others. Share with us what's happening. And as we turn to God, as our eyes are open to the reality of what's happening in society and we turn to God, who knows? Who knows? Who knows what God will do? If you want to be trained and equipped to go out and make a difference on the college campus or elsewhere, check out Fire School of Ministry. I know of no other place like it. AskDrBrown.org. Click on Fire School of Ministry. Tomorrow, get your questions ready. I'll take as many as I can, right here on the Line of Fire. Be blessed.